I have always been someone who joins things. But it's probably more accurate to say that I've always aspired to be a person who joins things. When I was in college, there was always an involvement fair at the beginning of every school year. So all the clubs and organizations on campus would set up tables on the Oval, which was the big grassy open area in the center of campus. And they would hand out flyers and candy and other free junk that you didn't need, and you'd walk around and see what you wanted to be part of. And this was at Ohio State, so it was a really big school, and there were a lot of options. And I wanted to be part of all of it. All of the community service clubs and the crafting groups and the rec soccer teams. So I'd collect all the flyers and the free stuff, and I'd go back to my dorm room. And that pile of stuff that I had collected would sit on my desk until the first meetings of all the groups had already passed by, and I had realized that I didn't actually have the time or the interest to get involved in all the things that I had felt compelled to join when a stranger handed me a clipboard and asked me to write down my name and email address. In the end, when it came down to it, when it came time for the follow-through, I'd usually just stick to the stuff I had been involved with the year before, and I never ended up joining that many new clubs. So I've always been amazed at the stories in the Bible of the disciples who just get up and follow Jesus. The ones who, when Jesus invites them to come with him, actually do that. They leave everything and they follow him. They join him on his travels and his ministry. They just get up and go. But I feel like I would have had some questions. I would have wanted a little more information about what was ahead. And when it came down to it, I don't know if I would have been like the fishermen we find in Luke's gospel. Because back then, following Jesus could literally mean following him as he traveled and as he ministered. It meant getting up and going. It meant signing the clipboard and then actually following through and showing up for the meetings. So I don't know if I would have joined Jesus' group in that way. But Luke tells us that after Jesus taught the crowd from Simon's boat, after he told the fishermen to put their nets back in the water, after a night that they hadn't caught any fish, after they ended up catching so many that their nets were beginning to break and their boats were starting to sink, Simon and James and John leave everything and follow Jesus. They leave their boats and the fish that they just caught and they go, just as they are. They leave their families and their jobs and their lives as they know them. They don't know what's ahead. They don't know what they're getting themselves into. But they leave everything and they follow Jesus. They join him. They become part of his ministry. They become part of this new community that Jesus is creating that's going to include fishermen and tax collectors and outcasts and sinners. They do all of this because they were transformed by their encounter with Jesus. After they heard his words and teachings, after the miraculous catch of fish, after Jesus tells them to not be afraid, they're compelled to follow him. It's like they have no choice but to join Jesus after they have this experience with him. They couldn't have that encounter and then stay put. They couldn't go back to the way things had been, to their individual lives, to going about their business as usual on their own. They needed to go with Jesus. They needed to be part of what he was doing. They needed to be together. Now, to be clear, there is some hesitation. Simon Peter, realizing that he's encountering the divine and he's amazed at what has transpired, he falls to his knees and confesses that he's a sinful man, so Jesus shouldn't want anything to do with him. And we've seen this kind of reluctance before. At the burning bush, Moses comes up with a lot of excuses as to why he's unfit for what God's looking for. The prophet Jeremiah protests that he's too young to be called. He's just a boy, and he doesn't know how to speak. Before saying, "Here am I, send me," the prophet Isaiah says that he has unclean lips and lives among people of unclean lips, so surely he can't be the person for the job. And then we have Mary, who before bravely stating that she's the servant of the Lord, questions how what Gabriel has told her about the upcoming birth of Jesus could be true, because she's a virgin. But these are the individuals that God calls. These are the people that God invites. And at first, they ask their questions and give in to their hesitation and reluctance. But then they respond to God's invitation. They commit to following God. They become part of what God's doing in the world. And we're part of that as well. We're part of God's story, part of what God's doing in this place. Something or someone in our lives has brought us here. Maybe it's a miraculous catch of fish in our own life. Maybe it's a family member who drags us here every week. But we've all been called and invited to join the community that God's creating here, that we are part of creating. Our worship and our Sunday school classes and our small groups and even our committee meetings. All of what we do here is a way of trying to live into what God's calling us to be, figuring out how to be and do that. Because while we live in a very different time and place than the first disciples, and the actual details of what following Jesus looks like might be very different for us than it was for them, we've heard and received the same good news. And like the disciples, that good news compels us to get together. Because once we've heard it, we know that the best response, that the only response, is to follow Jesus together, to come together. We can't just accept what we've heard and then go back about our way. Jesus' teachings about community and justice and love and hope, these teachings call us to be a community of justice and love and hope. But the thing is, this is not easy to do. Any relationship, any interaction between people, whether it's family members or friends or neighbors or strangers or fellow church members, can be kind of complicated and messy, because we're all kind of complicated and messy. And we bring all of ourselves, all of our gifts, and all of our imperfections with us when we gather together. And that means that we have to navigate all of that and all of our differences and all the ways that we get in each other's way. It's just part of what it means to be human. That we might show up with the best intentions and hearts full of the love of Jesus, but our follow-through isn't always there. And we don't always share that love with others. Last week, our high school Sunday school class watched a video and had a discussion about why we need more than spirituality in our lives. The pastor on the video was talking about how being spiritual but not religious isn't enough. It doesn't actually yield a robust and deep faith. She says that we need religion, we need community, and being part of a faith community to help our own individual spirituality and faith grow. But she acknowledged that this was hard to do. She said that it's not easy to be in community, to be the church with others. She said that it's hard to be in relationship with people who are just as annoying as she is. And I think that's just good self-awareness for all of us to take that home with us. So it's hard, but it's worth it. It's frustrating, but it's also really beautiful. Because we've all decided to be part of this in some way. Our individual experiences of God, our questions or doubts about God, they have called us here. As a church, we've decided to get together, to do life together, to share in each other's joy and pain, to show up at our best and at our worst, trusting that God's going to show up too. That God is present even and especially in all of the complicated and messy and hard and frustrating parts of our lives and relationships. Drew read from Paul's letter to the church in Corinth in 1 Corinthians, and they were no strangers to the challenges of community. Paul was writing to them specifically because they were a community that was divided in a lot of ways, on a lot of different issues, from dining practices to spiritual gifts to beliefs about the resurrection of Christ. They were trying to figure out how to be the church together, and they were understandably finding it a little bit challenging. But in his letter, Paul reminds the church in Corinth of the good news that he proclaimed to them, that brought them together in the first place, that Christ died for all of our sins and was buried and then raised on the third day. And then he appeared to the people so that they would believe. Paul reminds them of this good news, that it isn't true just for him or for a few of the Corinthians, but for all of them, for their whole community. At the end of this past week, Ollie and I both attended a conference at Columbia Seminary in Decatur. The topic was migration and border crossings, and it was an informing and challenging and heartbreaking conversation. And I suspect that we'll both be thinking about it and reflecting on it for quite a while. Because when we think of leaving everything behind, we need only think of migrants and refugees who leave everything they know just to follow the possibility of hope. The last event on the conference schedule was a visit to Clarkston, Georgia, which is just a few minutes down the road from Decatur. And it's one of the most diverse communities in the U.S. For decades, Clarkston has welcomed around 2,000 refugees every year from all different countries. There's something like 95 languages spoken in the schools today. I first heard of Clarkston when I was in college, and I read a book about a youth soccer team in that city that was made up entirely of kids who were refugees. And it was a really inspiring story, because it was these kids who shared somewhat similar stories, but were also from all these different backgrounds, and they spoke different languages. They came together to be part of a team, to be part of a community. It wasn't perfect, and there were some bumps along the road, but we know that that's what happens when we get together, when we try to create community. Yesterday at the conference, I got to listen to a man named Dr. Haval Kelly speak about his experience as a refugee in Clarkston. His family had to leave Syria after his father, who's a lawyer, was arrested. They spent time in a refugee camp in Germany before coming to the U.S. when Haval was 17. He's now a doctor, a cardiology fellow at Emory, and is in every sense a success story. But he notes that he couldn't have achieved any of this on his own. He talked about the importance of community, of being present in each other's lives. He remembers that there was an older couple who were members of a local church, and they came and knocked on his Muslim family's apartment door just to welcome them when they arrived. But keep in mind that this was just weeks after 9/11. But they built a relationship, and it was that woman who later drove Haval to Georgia State so that he could apply and register for college. He talks about all these people in his community and his life who had an impact on him, which is why he spends so much of his time now mentoring kids in Clarkston and building relationships and creating community. Because that's what's so beautiful about it. It's challenging, but like encountering Jesus on a boat in a lake, it's transformative. It changes lives and it changes the world we live in. We find in 1 Corinthians that Paul is somewhat similar to the biblical figures from earlier. Like Moses and Isaiah and Jeremiah and Mary, he's kind of skeptical about being called by God. He calls himself the least of the apostles because he persecuted the church. But then he says, "But by the grace of God, I am what I am, and God's grace toward me has not been in vain." It's that grace that he reminds the Corinthians about. It's that grace that we're reminded of. It's that grace that makes community work. The grace we receive from God and that we extend to one another. So what are we going to do with it? What kind of community are we creating with it? Because by the grace of God, we are who we are. And we're here together. Amen.